everyone, welcome. Thank you for joining the Fulbright webinar presentation today. We offer an ongoing series of webinars throughout the competition cycle on a variety of topics. And today I'll focus on how to complete the application. So thank you to my colleague for doing a sound check for us. It's always great to see everyone's responses and enthusiasm for the webinar. My name is Catherine Matto, and I am the Application and Selection Manager for the Fulbright Scholar Program. So today I'll briefly introduce you to the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. I'll breeze through the eligibility essentials, continue to the review process, and then we'll spend some quality time in the application. Today the focus really is on completing the application itself. You may have questions that are specific to a country or an award, and those may be best answered by our outreach colleagues, and their contact information you'll be able to locate in the catalog of awards. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a little bit. We'll also have some time to answer some questions. Hopefully we'll be able to answer questions throughout the course of the webinar, and you're able to submit those using that questions module on your screen. Go ahead and use that for that purpose. Again, I do hope to answer most of your questions throughout. We will post a recording of the webinar today on our website in the next few days for your reference, and we'll also have some time at the end of the webinar to answer some questions as well. So, eligibility and history of the Fulbright Scholar Program. So, the Fulbright Program was established in 1946 by a junior senator from Arkansas by the name of J. William Fulbright to promote mutual understanding between the people of the United States and the people of other countries of the world. For more than 60 years, the Council for International Exchange of Scholars, or CIES, has helped to administer the Fulbright Scholar Program, the U.S. government's flagship academic exchange effort on behalf of the U.S. Department of State's Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs. IIE, the Institute of International Education, and CIS, we work in concert with the U.S. embassies and Fulbright commissions abroad on program administration. So the Scholar Program is comprised of several kinds of opportunities. There's opportunities for teaching and or research in another country, and those are considered the core of our program. There's also opportunities for international education administrators and others to participate. Today, we'll focus on that core program. So for eligibility for all applicants, for all of our programs, U.S. citizenship is required. As you explore the opportunities within the Scholar Program, you'll find other requirements may include holding a doctoral degree, relevant teaching experience, and so on. So you'll want to read those awards carefully to make sure that you are applying to an award that fits your experience and your expertise the best. So what's the process? You, dear applicant, come up with a project and idea and decide on the location for it. Now, it may be in the opposite order. So maybe you have an idea of where you want to go, and then you start to come up with the idea of what you want to do there. So after refining it further, you present your project plan in the Fulbright application. Then your application goes through the review process, and we'll talk briefly about that process later in the presentation. So I mentioned an awards catalog. We have a catalog of awards online where we post our opportunities worldwide for these opportunities to go teach or research or do a bit of both. We also have these seminar programs that I had mentioned briefly, and all of that information is located here on the awards catalog. And when we post the PowerPoint of this presentation, you'll be able to click on this. So the web address is at the bottom of the screen. It's awards.cies.org. And you're able to search by broad categories, so region or country or discipline, so world region, individual country or discipline. And these are the broad fields. So each of the countries that participates in Fulbright is a partner in the process. They write the awards in collaboration with us and the U.S. Department of State, and the awards represent the host country's interests or needs that could be served well by a Fulbright Scholar. While the number of awards offered varies by country, many choose to offer an all disciplines award to give you more flexibility. About half of the catalog is comprised of these all disciplines awards, which are open to, well, all disciplines. They may or may not list preferred fields, and we encourage you to consider these all disciplines awards. In fact, you may have strong justification for the award, and it may also be the only award in that country that fits your project. It could also be the only award that that country offers. Now, some countries, by contrast, offer multiple awards, so the structure, as I mentioned, can vary. And if a country does offer multiple awards, you'll want to pay attention to the locations, the disciplines, and the award requirements. These parameters are typically what distinguish one award from another. Now, you can also search by discipline, and the results will include awards that list discipline as preference, and then it will show all disciplines' awards as well. So you'll see at the top of the page the discipline-specific awards, and then at the bottom of the page you can see all of the all disciplines' awards. Now, the discipline list is not quite perfect. You may need to search on the broader field or fields that you work in, such as arts if you're a photographer, or political science and economics if you're in international relations. You can also use the advanced search function to further refine your search, and there's also a keyword search that you can use to search for a specialization, for example. So while you're exploring, consider the relevance of the country. Why here? What will the impact be on you and the host country and the community? Chances are there's many awards that could be a good match. Again, you'll want to consider your background and expertise to help identify that award that fits these. And you also may wish to contact, you know, our team for more guidance, and that contact information is listed in the award descriptions. And we're more than happy to help to answer those questions as best as we can. Now, we can't tell you what award to apply for or, you know, what award is going to most likely garner a, you know, selection for that award, but we can help to advise. So let's actually spend some time talking to the application. So let's say you've chosen that award and it's time to put that application together. So there are a number of components in the application, and I realize I got too far in the slides. So you want to present an application package that clearly describes your proposed project and that demonstrates your preparation, background, and experience. The application itself is online, and we have more guidance on what these supporting documents should contain on our website. And we have one of the last slides in the presentation has links to these pages on our website. So let's actually jump over to the application. We'll navigate to it from the catalog of awards so you can see a little bit about how to get there when you're ready. So I'm going to flip over to our website. So you can start from the CIS website and click on Browse the Awards Catalog. And that will take you to the catalog of awards. And you can select a country, let's say Australia, nicely near the top of the alphabet in this case. And we'll search all awards so you can see what the awards are for Australia. One thing to note here that can be very helpful is that you can switch to a list view. So that can sometimes be a little bit easier to view the awards. So for the purposes of today, I'm going to select the award here for the University of Canberra. So here, you'll open this up and you'll see what more of the information is. So there's the grant activity, there's more about the grant parameters, so the grant lengths and the dates, the location, more about specific disciplines. So they're saying it is open to all, but they do have some preferences on a number of different disciplines. And this is a pretty long list here, so a lot of people would be quite would be eligible to apply for this award. Well, most people would be if discipline were the only piece. However, when we look at the applicant profile, you may find that the professional profile and the additional qualifications may have some more constraints. So in this case, the award is looking only for academics, and further, academics only at the level of associate or full professor. Now, I will say that many of the awards are open to professionals. There's many awards that are open to people who are early in their career, many who are, you know, independent scholars. So there's a lot of opportunities there. And so I recommend spending some time on the catalog and listening to some of our other webinars and contacting my colleagues. For example, Alexa is the contact for our awards in Australia. So we have contact information on each of these. So if you have any questions about a specific award or different awards and the requirements there, they're happy to help to answer those questions. So I want to navigate over to the application. So if I were to click on the Apply Now button, that will take us back to the CIS website where you can see some guidelines for those documents that go into your application. You can see the review criteria that your application is being reviewed for. And then there's the application login. And you can click on that to review more. We have some instructions that you'll be able to download and view as you're completing the application. And that link, the Embark application, the great big orange slash blue box here that changes color magically when you mouse over it, that will link you over to the application. Now, I've already logged in here, but when you log into the application, it's like logging into most other programs and applications. You'll provide your email address and some basic information, and you'll get an email letting you know that you've started an application, and you'll want to save that link to the application and also save your username and password that you've created so you have that for reference. I know many of us have multiple email addresses, so remembering which one the application is associated with can definitely be helpful. So let's take a look at the application. So these preliminary questions are asking first if you've completed a grant previously. There are somewhat new eligibility criteria that if you've had a Fulbright grant in the past 2 years that you may not be eligible. I encourage you, if you have had a Fulbright in the past 2 years, to read our eligibility more carefully, and we have a link here to the eligibility page for more information about that. As I said in the beginning, the U.S. Scholar Program does require U.S. citizenship, so hopefully you'll answer yes to that. If you're not a U.S. citizen, then there's a whole Visiting Scholar Program that I encourage you to consider, and we have more information about that on the CIS homepage. And then the third question is to which program you're applying. So if you are applying to, you know, the core program, so you're applying to teach or do research or both in another country, the chances are very good that you'll select the U.S. Scholar Program. So you may see two options. You may see a third option up here later. But chances are you'll be focusing on that one here for the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. If you're interested in learning more about these IEA programs, the Fulbright International Education Administrator Awards, we will have more webinars on those and completing that application, and we'll also have more information about those in the awards catalog. So proceeding through the application, we have the instructions here for quick reference. We're working on putting up the list of disciplines and specializations in here for reference as well, and that will come in handy in several pages when we get to that part of the application. So you've got some good references already, or resources rather, built right into the application. So the first questions are about what award and what program are you applying to? So this list of awards here at the very top are our regional awards. So in this case, you'll select the country or program to which you're applying. Now, if you're choosing a single country program, you'll just click on the box, the drop down here, and select the award. So in this case, I was looking at the award in Australia, and so I'll select Australia here. Now, if I were applying to one of the multi-country awards, so for instance, I wanted to go to Australia and India and France, then I would be applying for the Fulbright Global Scholar Award. And I wanted, would want to make sure, with the award description that what I wanted to do was a match for that award. But that would be the most likely selection there. And so if I were applying for Global, then I would click on Global here, and that will prompt me to list the countries to which I'm applying to. So I would type in Australia. The spelling test here, Australia, what did I say? India and France. And I can just separate those with commas. You can put them in alphabetical order. You can put them in the order in which you're planning to visit each country. It's up to you. So then I'm actually applying to Australia for the purposes of this example. So I switch back to Australia, and you'll see that box disappears. So it really helps to narrow the focus a little bit for the application. So I'm going to go back to the award description here really quick. Let's see, go back to this page. And which award did I choose? Here we are. Okay, 9063AS. So it's the Fulbright Scholar Award for the University of Canberra. So I will search, let's see, it's already limited me to the ones in Australia here. So I will pick the one for the University of Canberra. And then all of the awards for Australia are for research, so that makes an easy decision right here. If the award is open to teaching or research or a combination of the two or multiple options, that drop-down will have those other options there. Now here's where you'll enter the date that you plan on starting, and this is a month, not the actual date, the day, and then the year. So this application is for the 2019-2020 academic year, so that's why the years on here are limited. And then you'll enter the length, the proposed length of the grant. Now, for this award for Australia, I need to close this tab, keep going back to it. For this award for Australia, the award actually says that it's for 3 to 4 months. So that means that over here on this tab, I can only choose something that's either 3, 3.5, or 4 months in terms of that grant length. So I'll choose 3 for this application, and let's actually go back and take a look to see when it can start. So it says the grants must begin in January or February 2020, and that's in line with the Australian academic year. Now, some awards you'll find there's a little bit more flexibility in terms of starting. In other places, it's even more specific. It has to be February, for example. So it just depends on the award, and that's why you want to have that up at the same time that you are completing the application. So some awards and some awards allow you to propose flex. Now, flex allows a scholar to go to the same country over multiple trips. So say 2 or 3 trips, 2 or 3 visits to the same host country to do typically research, although the awards will be more specific about what activity is supported. Not all countries, not all awards offer this. You can't decide to offer it yourself and propose it if the award and the country don't offer it already. So it's not an a la carte menu. The menu is pretty well set here by the chefs of Fulbright, if you will. So we will have the grant length here, and then if I were applying to a country and award that allowed flex and I were applying for flex, then I would select either 2 segments or 3 segments. And what the other piece of that means is I would adjust my grant length to reflect the total number of months that I would be in that host country on that grant activity. So typically, the flex awards are for 4 to 6 months in total. So this number would be somewhere between 4 and 6 months, even though each segment may be 2 months, or even though there may be 20 months between, first segment and last segment, you'll still want to have that total grant length reflected as the amount of time you'll actually be in the host country. So that takes us through the program information. It does get a little bit faster, don't worry. The professional profile is your information, so your employment information. And you'll note that we have, if you've worked on an application, started an application before, you may note that this whole platform looks a little bit different. It looks a little bit newer, a little bit more modern, and it also shows a little bit more clearly where there's required fields. So in this case, the prefix is required. And then going through, we have more information. So you can see that you've had a little bit of fun working on the application. This is a test application that we have that we're working with here today. So we will continue through here. So we've got a preferred name, family or last name. So that would be entering your names as they appear on your passport. So the documentation is consistent throughout the application process and through selection. You'll also incorporate your professional information. So you'll enter your professional title and the start date of your position and whether or not you're a postdoctoral applicant. Now this is where we get further into the employment information. The current institution, this is a fun text box. So if I were, say, working at Syracuse University, you can actually type into that box, and it will start to auto-populate. So you can go ahead and select that. If your institution is not showing up here, or, for instance, you're just not quite finding it, you may need to do a little bit of searching. So you may want to do a keyword search. So if you were at, say, the University of Texas at Austin, you'll want to maybe search on Austin instead of University of Texas. Sometimes you'll see an at in the name, or it might be a comma or a dash, and just making that keyword search can make that search a little bit easier. But if your institution isn't in there, then you will want to put in other affiliation and then type in the institution name. Now, if you're not affiliated, if you're not employed by a university or a college, then you can enter no affiliation in this box instead, and that's also an option. And so you could select that and enter your employer information in the institution other box. And it may be that you're an independent artist or scholar or professional, and you don't necessarily have an employer name, and you can, you know, put that information into that box, or to say that you're an independent scholar, whatever is appropriate. So for the school, so if I were, for example, at Syracuse, you would then enter the school information. So maybe I am at the College of Engineering and Computer Science, and it's the Department of Civil Engineering. And math professors would be very surprised to see me coming out of an engineering program, but that's beside the point. So you'll actually want to put in the Department of and the College of. It makes our work a little bit easier on this end in having to enter that for you. The system doesn't automatically do so. So then you'll put in your address information and all of that. You'll put in your country and your zip code. I will note that the zip code should be in the zip plus 4, so the full 9 digits of that zip code, and that needs to go into this box. And then your work email, and that needs to go in as well. Phone number is really helpful in case we need to call you with any questions or any application statuses, just in case your email address isn't cooperating. We do encourage you to choose an email address that you'll be able to access and use over the course of the coming months. As we go through the review process, that will be the address or one of the addresses that we'll refer to and use to contact you with any questions. So our next page is the academic credentials section, and this is about your academic background. Now for here, you'll enter your highest or terminal degree first, so not necessarily in chronological order, but highest degree first. If you have a degree in progress, so say you are an applicant for one of our postdoctoral awards and you're working on your PhD, you'll want to enter the date that you expect your degree to be conferred. And you can enter the number of degrees that you'll add. So you can enter as many as are needed. If you decide that you need more, then you can you forget how many degrees you've earned and you want to add one more, you can easily do so. And those will pop up and you'll be able to add that information here. So you'll have your institution name and the city and state and country, the state only if it's in the U.S., the discipline and the name of degree and the date that it was conferred. So we'll also ask you about your academic specialization and discipline. Now, this is, thinking about this, it's about the area in which your project most closely falls in or into. So it may be that, you know, your work is quite interdisciplinary, but helping us to identify the field that is kind of the best fit for your project is the goal of this section. And that will ultimately help us with our directory on our website of scholars and alumni, where you can search actually to see, okay, so who are alumni in political science, for example, or engineering, for that matter, and everything in between. So in this box, you will enter your 5 most significant accomplishments. There's a variety of different kinds of accomplishments depending on where you are in your career, what your field is. So it's really up to you to submit information that's relevant in this box. It can help to highlight your background and your expertise to those reviewing your application. I do want to note that you only should be using Latin alphabet characters, so no accents and no special symbols. Those make it a little tricky on the back end for us when we're exporting information. they don't always convey the way that we want them to. And to separate the items, you'll only want to use semicolons and not pressing enter or return on your keyboard. That can insert extra spaces and make the character count a little bit finicky. So it is a 700 character limit. That's characters, so that's not words. It's spaces, punctuation, letters, numbers, everything. So you'll want to maybe work on that in Word. Do a word count, character count, use that tool in Word, and then copy it into the application. Now, next up, we have the residence or professional trips abroad. And this is for more than 3 consecutive months over the past 6 years. And this speaks to an eligibility question for the application, that the Fulbright Scholar Program, one of the pieces of eligibility is to not having been abroad for more than 5 of the past 6 years. And you can read more about that on our website. I won't belabor that point too much, because that is described in more detail there. But you can add multiple trips here. So if you've had, you know, summers abroad, or if you've had part, you know, semesters abroad, or any kind of trips, that kind of thing, you're welcome. We encourage you to put those in this space. Again, it's for 3 consecutive months or longer, so you wouldn't have to put anything in there that's, you know, 2 weeks or, you know, 6 weeks or what have you. And then we also ask if you've had a prior Fulbright or Fulbrights before. So let me show you what that looks like briefly. So it'll ask you for the type of grant if you've had one or more, and it will then ask you for what academic year that was in and where you went on that grant. And maybe it was, you know, maybe it was coming to the U.S. and maybe it was going abroad. So the options are there for you to complete that information. So moving on to the next page, personal information. So this is your home address, so your residential address. And we don't do a lot of mailings to applicants. Most of our communication is by email. But Fulbright does work with, Fulbright is a program, as I mentioned before, that is congressionally funded and appropriated. So Congress sometimes wants to know where our scholars are coming from. And that's helpful to know for their congressional districts. So we want to make sure that information is updated and current here. And again, that zip code is a required field. It's the nine-digit zip code, and we've provided the link to the USPS in case you don't know it. I know I don't know mine, so I would have to look up my own here as well. Your preferred email address. This is the email address that we'll use most for emailing you if we have any questions. Or updates, application status updates are sent to this email address. So you want to make sure it's an address that you are going to be able to access over the coming months. If it changes, please let us know and just make sure to look out for emails from IIE.org for your application. And I should note, actually, while I'm talking about emails coming from the program, the emails that you would be receiving about your application, so when you log into the application or, you know, once you've submitted the application, those would be coming from EMBARC, from the application system itself. And EMBARC is a separate organization. We work with them on the application. So employment eligibility, this is a question about whether or not you have worked with the U.S. Department of State or U.S. Agency for International Development, so USAID, or other organizations or agencies related to the Fulbright program. If you have, you'll answer yes to this, and you'll provide some more information in the box here. If you haven't, then you'll click no, but you'll want to answer that either way. Honestly, of course, and you know, either provide information or not. So moving on to families, I know many people are excited about bringing family with them on their Fulbright, and so this is the place to enter more information about them. So dependents in terms of the grant and grant benefits can either be a spouse or a relative, so specifically a child, grandchild, parent, or sibling who is financially dependent on the applicant. Of note, also, accompanying dependents need to spend at least 80% of the grant period with the grantee abroad. That's a program requirement in terms of receiving the financial benefits that may be available to dependents. And those financial benefits would be explained further in the award description under the financial benefits section. So you can list your relatives here who would be accompanying you, your dependents, proposed dependents, and if they're in school, you can indicate what year they'll be in at the time of the grant start. Okay, so our next question is felony misdemeanor. So if you've ever been convicted of a felony or misdemeanor or arrested for, indicted, or charged with a felony or misdemeanor, we would follow, if you say yes to any of these, we'll follow up with you separately outside of the application review process with questions just to receive some more information about that. We also have a race ethnicity survey as part of the application that is not, of course, part of the selection process. It's purely optional, and this is more to help our outreach team is totally confidential, so you don't have to worry about the information, the contents of that information. The next piece that I'm sure you know is also on your minds is also other sensitive information and how we're working with that. So we have your date of birth and city of birth and other information. We removed one question that I know applicants had questions about previously that was also containing sensitive information. So I want you to know that your information is secure. We are on a secure website here with Embark. And we're only asking the information that we need in order to review and process your application for a federally funded program. So I know we've had questions about that over the years and just wanted to set your minds at ease there. So moving into more of the fun stuff in the application, more of the fun part, so the references. So our application requires 3 letters of reference. If you have seen the application in prior years, you may note that there all of this information is all in the same place this year. So you'll only have one place, and it's all on the same page where you enter your referee's information. So this page has more guidance about who can serve as a referee, some guidance on how to work through that process. We ask you whether or not you waive your right to the information in those references. And then we have this section here where you can register your referees. So you scroll down and you can enter their information here. So you could say, let's see, Dr. Eric Smith, for example, and enter their address here. Obviously not a real person. You know, the email would then go to this person once we click on invite recommenders. Now you'll note that there's only 2 lines here, so you'll click on that plus sign to add the 3rd person to be invited. So what will happen is you'll enter their information here, you'll click on invite recommenders, and then they'll receive an email from Embark, not from IAE, but actually from Embark.com, and that will send them, they'll receive a link that will direct them to upload their letter of reference to the application system. So you wouldn't email us the reference letter, they wouldn't email us the reference letter. You'll be able to just go in, add their email address and information, and then that will go right in, their reference letter, once it's submitted, will go right into your application and we'll be able to see it from our end, the actual letter, and you'll be able to see whether or not it's been submitted. So one of the cool things about the reference section is that you can work on your application and they can go ahead and submit their references before or after you submit your application. So ideally, everything would all be submitted before the August 1 application deadline. Maybe you coordinate with them and everything is submitted on, you know, July 15th. Great. So you can rest easy for the next few weeks while other applicants are you know, pulling their applications together, but maybe, you know, one of your referees hasn't submitted their reference. So you've gotten everything in. Maybe 2 of your referees have already submitted their references, but you're trying to figure out if that 3rd letter of reference has been submitted. So we have information here about the status. So you'll be able to access your application after you submit it to see what the status is of their reference letter. So either the reference hasn't been invited, if it's blank, if they have been invited, then they've been registered and the email has been sent. It may be that they haven't opened the email yet. So if it says opened, then they have received the email and they have opened it, they just haven't submitted the reference yet. And then if it's been submitted, then, well, the reference letter has been submitted, and we'll be able to see that it's been submitted on our side as well. So hopefully this is a little bit easier than it has been in past years if you've used this application platform previously. We're pretty excited about this this change, if you can't tell from the enthusiasm in my voice. And that brings us to the other piece of the references, if you will, and that's the Fulbright Language Proficiency Report. And this piece may or may not be required. So for Australia, where I was looking to apply, it would not be required. But if you were going to, say, Morocco, then it might be required. So this is where I would read carefully the options that are available in the application. And so it'll say, you know, language proficiency is required for what you're proposing to do, or it's not required, or maybe you're a native speaker of the language for the activity that you're proposing to undertake. And with each of these options, you'll see more instructions below as to what the specific requirements are in terms of the language proficiency report. So what does this mean? So for each relevant language, you'll enter it. So say I were applying to go to Bangladesh and maybe, or India, and maybe I needed to speak Bangla, and maybe I already speak Bangla, and so I'll enter my competencies for each of these. Reading and selecting drop downs apparently and talking at the same time are too much all at the same time, so bear with me here. So you would enter this information here in the relevant languages and relevant to the actual project that you're proposing to do. So if I were, say, going to Australia, this might not be relevant. So it wouldn't be necessary to enter this information if I were applying to go to Australia. So the next piece is the self-evaluation. And so if I were applying to go to, say, France or Morocco, and I need to add French, this is where I could do that. So I could say France is where I'm applying to go to, and I need to be able to speak French there. And then I will answer the relevant questions here. So this has multiple options here, primarily for people applying to multiple countries. So we had talked in the beginning, if I had selected the Global Scholar Award or one of the other multi-country awards, then I might need to have multiple languages, or competency rather, in multiple languages. So then I would enter them here. So for example, if I were just going to France, I would choose just one. But if I were going to, say, France, Australia, and India, like we had talked about before, then I might put France and French for the first, and then maybe India and, let's see, India, and then tab over to the next question on your keyboard or use your mouse, and maybe I need to speak, there we go, there's Hindi. That would be the other language. So then you can answer your self-evaluation here for either or both languages if you're selecting more than one. And you can use the spaces to answer the prompts here. So as we scroll down this page, so I was talking about the references before and how this is kind of connected to the references. So in the reference section, you can select three people. In the language proficiency report, there is an external language evaluator, and this used to be part of the references section, and I'm super glad that it's separate now because it's a lot easier to navigate. So for the external language evaluator, this is someone who would evaluate your competency in speaking another language. So you wouldn't use this for English, but you would use it for, say, French or Hindi or another language. So again, it looks similar to the references page. It's pretty easy to fill out. Fill in their information and then click on invite recommenders. So it says recommenders, but we know it's a language evaluator. So you'll want to list those. So if you were applying to a country or countries where you needed to have multiple languages, there is a spot to add a second person. So again, if I were applying to India and France and Australia, my English is fine, I think, for Australia, and I would probably need to brush up on my French and my Hindi in order to go to the other two countries. But I would want to have appropriate language speakers and evaluators who can complete those evaluations for me. And those, it operates the same way. So it would send that person an email. They would click on the link in the email, upload their language evaluation, and then that would be part of your application. Let's see, scrolling up, moving over to the project details. So this is where you enter your project title. So what is this project about? It should be descriptive. And then an abstract or a summary of your proposed project. Now, both of these do have some text limits, so they can't be too long. I know it's easy to want to make a longer summary, but there is a 700 character limit on this box, so you'll want to be mindful of that. And again, like those the accomplishments that we were talking about before, it may be easier to write that up in Word and then, you know, check the character count on that, your spaces and punctuation and everything all count toward that character count, and then copy it over into the application. And it will let you know if you have exceeded that character count. So you'll want to be mindful of that. So the next piece of the application is about the invitation letter. So relevant to where, you know, what do I want to do for my project? This is the where do I want it to be? So within that particular country. So some awards require an invitation letter and for you to identify a host institution. Some countries and awards do not require it. Some countries don't actually want you to do that homework and identify the host institution or to seek an invitation letter. And they may have, you know, good reasons for that. A couple of awards that come to mind are the award in Bhutan, I believe, doesn't ask you not to seek an invitation letter. And I think the award for teaching in China is the same way. Don't hold me to that, but there are awards out there that you don't need to seek an award letter or an invitation letter for. So for the countries where you do need to have an invitation letter or want to identify a preferred host, you'll enter that preferred host here. So this is where, so for Australia, if I were going to propose the University of Canberra, okay, so it's already populating here, so you can see that blue box pop up. And you may be wondering what browser I'm working in. I'm working in Chrome right now. This seems to be the browser that works best for the application. You can use Firefox, you can use Safari. We've had some challenges with Internet Explorer. It tends to run a little bit slower on there. We haven't had a lot of experience using Safari. I would say Chrome is the most reliable and easiest to complete the application on Chrome. So you can list University of Canberra here. If this were an application for that multi-country award and you were going to, you know, India, you could say, okay, so here is where I want to go in India. I can't spell today. Let's see. Let's try this again. Sometimes it's just the computer needing a, you know, shot of espresso too. So for India, maybe I want to go to Jamia. And maybe for Australia, I've got the University of Canberra. And then for, let's see, France, maybe I will be in Toulouse. So now, when you've misspelled things, it may not underline, as you're noticing, you may be noticing here. So you want to go back. It actually ended up doing that. But you'll want to go back and just double check that you are spelling things right. Let's see, Islamia. Okay. Okay. So moving on, so that would be where you would put the host institution information. And then the next question is about whether or not you received an invitation letter. So it'll say yes, no, or you've sought one. If this is an award that doesn't ask for an invitation letter, you would just go ahead and select no for this. Otherwise, you could say yes or letter sought if you are waiting for that invitation letter to come in. We do hope that you will be able to get that invitation letter by the application deadline, so by August 1. And, you know, we've got plenty of time between now and then, so hopefully that will all come together for you. Now, the next few questions are about being considered for other awards. And I want to highly stress here that the application that you're presenting really needs to be tailored to the award that you have selected. It needs to be really focused on that, and it's only guaranteed to be considered for that country and that award, or countries if it's the multi-country, one of the multi-country awards. It's only in rare cases that applicants might be considered for other awards. That said, we do ask for this information in the application, so if you are willing to be considered for other awards or other countries, we have place for you to put that information in. So next up, and almost the end of this page, we have the ethical requirements. So we strongly encourage you to fully read all of the information here. I won't spend the time to do that for you today. I'm sure you're fully capable of being able to do that and clicking on these links in the application to read more about this piece of the application. But the short version is that if you are proposing to work with people or work with animals, then we want you to think about the ethical considerations involved in doing such work. So take a look, read carefully, think about what you're going to be doing, and answer the yes-no questions here to the best of your ability. So moving on, we have uploads of documents. So you've been probably wondering, okay, so I've entered the basics about my application. Where do I have to upload all the big stuff? This is the big stuff. This is the project statement. It's on this first page, and this is your opportunity to really describe what it is you plan to do, why it's important, how you're prepared for it, and more. And we have more content guidelines here than I'm going to spend time on. We'll have more webinars talking more about these pieces, or more opportunities to speak with my colleagues about this over the coming weeks. If you have any questions, we're happy to help to answer. But in terms of the logistics of uploading your document to our system, we would encourage you to submit to upload a PDF, so an Adobe document to the system. It seems to work better than Word documents going into the system, but all you have to do is click on that upload file and then click on the relevant document. And then, it said to open. And by clicking on open, it will prompt that pops up, it'll upload it to your application. Now, I will note that there is a page limit for this document. It's 3 to 5 pages. It is single or double-spaced, 12-point or larger font size, 1-inch or greater margins. And yes, we have had to become more specific about this over the past years. Being cognizant of that as you're uploading and converting it to PDF actually can help to make sure that you meet those requirements. Because sometimes if you upload a Word document and it's close to the page limit, sometimes the conversion on our end will actually send it over the page limit. So that's where converting it yourself can save you some headache in the long run. So your CV or resume, this helps to demonstrate your experience and academic preparation and professional preparation for your project. This has a 6-page limit for most awards. For our Distinguished Chair Awards, it's up to 8 pages. I realize that this is short for many, many of our applicants. And we ask that you, again, follow the guidelines on this, and it's 6 or 8 pages. We will contact you if we see that you've submitted more than that, because we do ask all of our applicants to adhere to the same requirements here. Our reviewers greatly appreciate that as well. And you may find that you may need to use a selected list of publications or presentations, exhibitions, et cetera, that reflect what you are proposing to do and help demonstrate your preparation for that project. In terms of citations, we do ask for full citations, and in terms of this document and another document that I'll talk about in a minute, to kindly pick a citation format and be consistent with that. So whether it's APA or MLA or another format, pick one and be consistent in its use. So the other document that would have citations is the bibliography. This is a sort of a literature review, but in more of a list format typically, to demonstrate the work that's been done in the field or on the topic previously. And this helps to demonstrate that you have, it can help to demonstrate that you've done your homework in terms of contextualizing the project, in terms of ensuring that it hasn't been done already, so identifying a gap. And it can also show how your proposal, how your project will help to further contribute to the work that's already been done. So same for the other documents. You'll upload that PDF document here. If you are applying for research or teaching research, you'll need to submit that bibliography. If it's a teaching application, then you'll submit a document with course syllabi. Now, the page limit is up to 10 pages, and I want to note that because it's 10 pages total for all syllabi and outlines combined. Not 10 pages per syllabus, and that can make a big difference when you're pulling documents together and thinking about what you want to include in these documents. So you may need to think about what information is most relevant and most helpful for someone reviewing your application to see. So that also can mean that sometimes you might be removing information. So, for example, the food policy in your classroom, for example. So if the award requires or asks for an invitation letter, this is where you would upload that. If you have multiple letters of invitation, you'll need to combine them and then upload them here. There isn't a place to upload multiple invitation letters separately. You'll have to combine that yourself. So if you are an applicant in the creative fields, you will be asked to submit supplemental materials. And we have more instructions on this, and there's a separate site to upload those materials. I won't take a lot of time on that. We have instructions on this in the application here and on our website. And that takes us to almost the finish line, actually. So we have the publicity survey here to ask you more about how you heard about the program and to help us again with our outreach and recruitment efforts. And there's the certification, so read this carefully. We hope that you have read it before you submit it, certifying that the information in your application is true, accurate, and complete, and that if anything has been falsified or misrepresented or omitted, there could be ramifications in terms of the review of your application. So not to get all scary at the end for you, but it is something that we do take seriously. The last page is a review of your application. So in this case, I know I didn't complete a lot of the fields, but hopefully yours will not have any of these errors and reminders to go back and complete fields. But if you have forgotten anything, the application system will let you know before it allows you to submit. So you'll fill in all of this information and then scroll to the end, and then you'll be able to submit the application. I want to encourage you to make sure that you've submitted the application. I know we have applicants who occasionally get to August 1 or, they realize on August 1 that they haven't actually submitted the application. So we want to make sure that you actually do that. So what happens actually after the application is submitted? So first stage, did you follow the directions? So our program staff, our team will conduct a technical review of the applications for eligibility and completeness. There's a peer review process that's two phases. We have a discipline review process, and we also have a regional review process. And they will be reviewing the application. So this means, in the discipline, we've got experts in your field reviewing applications, and then the regional process includes non-experts. So this means that your application really needs to address the technical aspects that your peers would expect, and also describe them in such a way that those outside your field would also understand. After that, we would notify you of your status, whether or not you've passed the peer review process, and those applications that have passed the peer review process would be reviewed by the Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board, the particular host country or countries, and finally the U.S. Department of State. And we would notify you, of course, after that, as soon as we can, which is the phase that we're in for many of our applicants right now. So the review criteria, I wanted to highlight briefly, it's a summary of the criteria that are used to evaluate applications. We have more information and more details about this on our website. But I wanted to highlight that those reviewing the application really want you to demonstrate that you're qualified and able to take on what you propose, that the project is sound and well-planned, and that you can adapt the project if you need to. And more than likely, you will need to based on many alumni feedback. And that your project will also have an impact. It can be helpful if you've done similar work before, but you still need to show that you've done your homework to prepare for this project. Similarly, it can also, you know, it's great when somebody hasn't, you know, done this before, but it still needs, you still need to show that you can do this and that you are able to see it through. So lastly, your Fulbrightiness. This term was coined by some of our alumni, and this gets at your willingness to engage with the community while on the grant. That impact piece is really important in the Fulbright Scholar Program. So we have more information about application resources on our website. We encourage you to start with the awards catalog and then to also look at the application guidelines. We have more guidance, as you saw in the application, about the project statement and the CV and the other documents. More webinars. We'll have many more webinars over the coming months on a variety of topics, from regionally oriented ones to discipline-specific ones, and we'll have more over the coming months on the application itself. So we encourage you to keep visiting that schedule and to keep signing up for more. You won't hear me the entire summer, which is great. You'll hear many of my colleagues. You probably get tired of hearing my voice over the coming months, so we'll keep it interesting. I do have a few minutes where we can answer some questions that have been asked, and let me pull those up. If you do have questions, you're welcome to answer. You can try to answer them, but you're also happy to, you're also welcome to actually submit questions to be answered. Hopefully I've answered many of your questions in the course of the webinar. Let me pull this up and let's see. So that's a great question. Someone was asking about invitation letters. We have more, more information on our website. So if you were to go over to those application guidelines to see, there's more information about the invitation letters and how to seek one. There's a quick kind of podcast about how to pursue an invitation letter. Is there a way to see a list of what Fulbright awards have been granted in the past? Yes. The Fulbright Scholar Directory I think that's linked here. The Fulbright Scholar Blog, the Fulbright Scholar Directory is also on our webpage, and that is a terrific resource for seeing who has been to what countries. So you can look by the host country. You can also look by your own institution. So I was looking at, say, Syracuse, and you could see, okay, well, who else on campus has had a Fulbright, and it may be people that you didn't even realize had Fulbrights. That's sometimes the fun of looking through the directory. So interdisciplinary applications and how are they reviewed? That's a great question. So applications are reviewed by the discipline. So thinking about what discipline, you know, most closely represents your field and your project, especially your project. And then it's also reviewed by a regional review committee, where the regional committee would be the committee where the application is either moved forward or not moved forward. The discipline committee, that group of experts provides more information to the regional reviewers about, reviewing your application against the criteria. So thinking about the qualifications and the expertise and the nature of the project and the currency in the field and so on. So there's a number of different people looking at it from different perspectives. Some who really will understand what you're working on and some who may not, who may need a little bit more background about what is, you know, this project on, you know, for example, nanotechnology. An artist or a political science might not fully understand what nanotechnology is. So making sure that things are, you know, clearly explained, having other people read your project statement is so strongly encouraged and can be really helpful in making sure that your project statement is really accessible and meets the criteria in the application. So should the invitation, who should the invitation come from? It really depends a bit. Some awards have a specific person listed. Some universities work differently than others in terms of who can issue an invitation letter, as you know is the case here in the U.S. So it depends a little bit, but I would reach out if you have an idea of an institution, reach out to see what the process might be there. And yes, cold calling can definitely be part of that process. If you have any questions about the link to the application, feel free to email us. We're working on updating our website with a new link to this current application. So you're welcome to email us for the correct link. It should be on the website, and we'll double check that. So thank you for letting us know. If you are applying to, oh, this is a great question. If you're applying to teach, do I need a project? Yes, teaching is your project. In that case, what is it that you want to teach? What is it that you have to offer? What is it that the students at this institution or, you know, in this part of the country can really benefit from having, you know, someone with your background and your expertise learn? Maybe you have a, you know, teaching style that is not commonly used in that particular host country or that particular institution. What are ways that you can be involved in the department in which you would be teaching, or departments if you're working with multiple? There's a lot more to it than okay, I want to go teach. Okay, so what do you want to teach and why? And so we have more prompts about that in the application guidelines. It's a great question because I think it can kind of be a stumbling block sometimes. So let's see. If you have, again, specific questions about the individual awards, I would look at the awards catalog. If you have any questions about like dates or other grant parameters or the qualifications, I would definitely email my colleagues. For instance, you know, if it's about like Australia or Sweden, those are really different parts of the world with different awards and different structures, and they'll be best able to answer those questions. So in terms of the letters of reference, we have some guidelines about who they should come from. I would take a look at those tips and who can write the invitation letter. Sorry, the letter of reference. Generally speaking, it's people who know you and your work well. So it might be your supervisor, it may be a colleague at your own institution, it may be a colleague from another institution. Having some breadth of organizations and institutions there can be helpful. But it's one of those answers that it really depends on the applicant and your particular situation. And we're happy to help to answer that question. Talking with alumni can also be helpful to hear what they did and what worked for them. And you may have, again, you may have alumni right on campus that you might not be aware of that they can be a resource for you. There's also the Fulbright Scholar Liaison Network, and they are a network of people who we work with on many, many campuses across the country. I'm not even going to hazard a guess on how many, but it's over 1,000 different campuses across the country who have more information about Fulbright and may, you know, have some resources. Some universities have info sessions, or they're able to connect you with other alumni in a kind of more formal way. It depends on the institution. Some have this, some don't. Some are more engaged and some are less so. That isn't to say that if they aren't, you know, if there isn't as much engagement that you're, you know, you've still got great resources. You still have alumni, you still have us, that we've seen many successful applications from a really wide variety of places across the country. Community colleges, small liberal arts colleges, Research One institutions, and everything in between. Geographically all over the U.S., we've seen Hawaii, we've seen Alaska, and up in the far reaches of Maine and Minnesota and Florida and really everything in between. So it's great to see to see that, and you can see that in the alumni directory as well. Just looking at a couple more questions. I know we're over time, so I want to be cognizant of that, but I want to try and answer a couple more questions if time allows. If If you're currently teaching at an American university abroad, does that count as time spent abroad? It does. So even if it's, you know, an American university and it's a branch campus, because you are not in the physically in the United States, that does count as time spent abroad. Do we recommend contacting alumni for feedback on projects? I would say yes. I know many of our alumni have had their project statements read by many others, be it, you know, people in their department, other colleagues at other institutions in the same field, people in different fields. Sometimes people will have them read by their spouses or someone who's not familiar with the field to get their feedback as well. Kind of like the, well, if so-and-so will, you know, can get the gist of what I'm trying to do and the importance of it, then others should as well. That will, you know, help to, if they have questions, right? If they're not sure, like, what do you mean by this? What does this really, you know, jargony word mean? That can help to get you thinking about how do I need to present this that's going to be really accessible to someone else who might not be familiar with it either. So that, I think, wraps up. Okay, one last question. I'm just too happy to answer questions today. So if there's a university not listed on Fulbright, can we still seek an invitation? So it depends on the award. So if you were applying to, say, this award for Australia that I pulled up for the University of Canberra, that is for the University of Canberra. So you wouldn't, you know, look at RMIT and then apply to the University of Canberra award. On the other hand, if you were applying to the All Disciplines Award for Australia that is open to any institution, you could, you know, select any university. There might not be one listed. It really depends on the award. Some countries have an All Disciplines Award, and they say that it can only be at these universities. And there may very well be good reasons for that, and you're welcome to contact us if you have further questions about that. There's too many variations to be able to answer specifically on a format like this. So with that, thank you for spending some time with us today, time with me today on the application and completing it. I hope that I've answered as many questions as you've had going into this webinar. If you still have some questions, please feel free to contact us. We have our, you know, website here. We have more information available, and we also have our contact information at scholars@iie.org. And you're welcome to email us with questions, and we'll do our best to help you prepare the strongest application that you can before the August 1 application deadline. I do want to reiterate that applications are encouraged from academics and professionals from all disciplines, representing the many types of institutional and professional affiliations. And the Fulbright Scholar List, as we've talked about on our website, our alumni directory, helps to demonstrate that the Fulbright program is a program that supports that diversity of American academia and the professional world. We urge you to utilize the resources on our website and, to contact us if you have any questions. Your application does have to go through the peer review process before it proceeds to the in-country review. And if you're not selected on that first try, we're happy to work with you to reapply. It's early in the application season yet, so you've got plenty of time to think about where you want to go and what you want to do. So thank you for taking the time to think about that and for attending our webinar this afternoon. Again, please visit our website for more information, and we look forward to hearing from you and assisting you with your application. Thank you, and take care.